figures from the department to see what kind of complaints, the nature of the complaints, and to see maybe even investigate with the Department of Revenue to get their track record.
Well, we might also, Mr. Chairman, get some information from the folks who are going to be operating under this law
addition,
is to have them take a look at it, because as I understand it, most of the legitimate tax preparers already have this. In fact, I would guess that some of them are already carrying insurance to protect themselves. And it would seem to me that we ought to take a look at what they're presently doing. What you're after is to take care of the illegitimate. That's probably an improper statement.
I think it is. I think you should have a better language. I would agree.
Let me put it this way: we don't want to penalize the legitimate operators.
Eleanor, would you check with Representative Otto after the hearing to see what kind of help he needs, what information he needs, please? Thank you. Okay, Ralph, you're on.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Ralph Short. I am appearing as a registered lobbyist for the Tax Practitioners Political Action Committee, which was formed in late 1982 to support the continuation of the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners and the licensing of tax consultants and return preparers. I am a retired federal employee. When I retired in January 1981, I had served the federal government for 40 years, 35 of which were with the Internal Revenue Service. Since August of 1971, I was district director of the Portland IRS district, which covers the state of Oregon. Relatively early in my tenure as district director, I was contacted by representatives of a tax practitioner group requesting the assistance of the Internal Revenue Service in designing a training program to enhance the skills of the individual members in the preparation of tax returns for their clients. I was very much impressed with the attitudes of these people and their desire to improve their ability to serve the public. Since their objective appeared to support the IRS desire to decrease errors in the tax returns which were filed, I assigned personnel to work with the group to design a training program. Subsequently, I agreed to furnish instructors for the training, which, as I recall, was of 3 days' duration and took place in space rented by the group at the Coliseum in Portland. The group that I dealt with emerged as the Association of Tax Consultants. That organization actively supported proposed legislation to require the licensing of tax consultant and tax preparers who provided services to the public for pay. That bill provided that a written test must be passed prior to the granting of a license. It also provided for an annual continuing education requirement in order for a licensee to retain the license. The law was to be administered by a board which would also investigate complaints against licensees and which would have the authority to mete out appropriate penalties when violations were verified. That bill was passed in the fall of 1973 with an effective date of January 1, 1974. Until I retired, I received copies of the minutes of the meetings of the Board of Tax Service Examiners, and I maintained liaison with the administrator. The minutes of the board set forth summary accounts of investigations made by the field investigator and the action taken by the board in each case. I was very much impressed by the obvious determination of the Board of Tax Service Examiners to enforce the requirements of the law relative to the behavior of licensees. Reprimands, suspensions, and revocations of licenses, as well as civil penalties, faced licensees who were careless with their responsibilities. In cases of minor infractions, appropriate warnings were given. The board developed appropriate examinations with assistance from qualified sources, including the State Department of Revenue and a professor of accounting from Portland State University. I have been personally acquainted with many of the members of the board since 1973, and I was impressed with their integrity and their determination to administer the law fairly and in an even-handed manner. The continuing education requirement is carefully administered by the board. Initially, the board sponsored appropriate seminars to ensure the availability of an adequate number of training courses of proper content and quality. Now there are a number of approved seminars with excellent instructors, including recently the chairman of the accounting department at Portland State University, certified public accountants, and some top-flight revenue agents. What does it cost to administer this licensing law? What does it cost the citizens of Oregon to have a State Board of Tax Service examiners prepare and administer examinations, conduct field and investigations of complaints, issue licenses, approve the content of continuing education seminars, hold hearings, and determine the penalties to be imposed for the violations that were found to have occurred? The revenues produced by the operations of the board arise from the issuance of licenses, examination fees, civil penalties, and miscellaneous items. To date, the revenues produced, according to the board's report covering operations through June 1982, have exceeded its expenditures for each biennium of the board's existence by from $15,000 to more than $50,000. Thus, this assurance by the board of tax consultant and tax preparer competence, as well as their integrity and ethics, has not cost the taxpayers of Oregon anything to date. Why does Oregon need a licensing law if no other state has one? California had a registration law. There was no examination. There was no continuing education requirement. The practitioner merely paid the annual registration fee and received the license. That law did not do the job. Funding for that law was stopped in 1981, and the law was repealed in 1982. Now California has tried again. The new law, as I understand it, is still a registration law and became effective February 1st, 1983. There are some qualification requirements, but no examination is required to obtain the license, and there are continuing education requirements. Penalties are spelled out for specific violations. Maybe this time the law will work. I am told that the state of Washington is considering the bill at the present time, and that people from Washington have visited the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners to learn how it operates. Thus, Oregon is recognized as having a licensing law with teeth in it that has been successfully administered for 9 years. I say other states would do well to follow our example. When citizens have complaints against attorneys, they can register their complaints with the state bar. When there is a complaint against a CPA or a public accountant, it is dealt with by the State Board of Accountancy. If there are complaints about the work of tax consultants, the Board of Tax Service Examiners now has the responsibility of handling them. Before 1974, there was no place for the citizen to take his complaint. Are we going to revert to that situation in 1984? I hope not. If we have state boards for licensing barbers and hairdressers, farm labor and tree planters, TV and radio repairmen, hearing aid dealers and massage technicians, isn't it reasonable to continue the licensing and control of the sensitive work of preparing income tax returns?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cannon.
Would you explain to me what a massage technician is?
I get it. No, I just forget I asked the question.
Mr. Chair, of course,
you don't have to respond to that. You're telling me massage numbers. Go ahead.
I firmly believe that taxpayers who need help to prepare their tax returns should have assurance that the help they pay for is competent, honest, and fair. Your Board of Tax Service Examiners, in my opinion, has performed this function in a highly satisfactory manner during the years of its existence since January 1, 1974. I strongly recommend that you support House Bill 2093 to continue the work of the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners. I have available for your inspection a number of letters which the Tax Practitioners Political Action Committee has received from citizens of Oregon who feel the licensing law should be continued. I shall be pleased to try to answer whatever questions or concerns you might have, even though I quit being an administrator in the tax field 2 years ago.
Any questions, committee members?
Yeah.
Bob.
Thank you, Representative Schoon. I have one question. I'm a little confused about something. I noticed in your little paper that you fined a person for not working, for filing income taxes not under the supervision, I think it said, of a
tax consultant.
A consultant. I don't see that in your list of do's and don'ts. And could you explain it? Do you have to have a tax consultant within the office or something?
My understanding is that a tax preparer has to be supervised by a tax consultant. And when a tax preparer prepares a tax return, it has to pass through the review and the okay of the tax consultant.
I see. Thank you.
I'm not sure your question was fully answered. Is anybody can tell us where that is included in law? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it's in the present statute that a tax preparer must work under the supervision of a tax consultant.
And Eleanor, is that included in the rewrite of the bill that we have here, or is that in a different section?
It's in the present law.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Short? Thank you, Mr. Short. Raymond Case, or Cass, C-A-S-S. And Merlin Pulliam, I take it? Could you identify yourselves for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Raymond Cass, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of Public Accountants. With me today is our Executive Secretary from Portland, Richard Garlock. The members of our committee, or our association, consist of public accountants, licensed tax consultants, tax preparers, and certified public accountants. The OAPA generally supports the bill as it is written, as we feel there is a need for the continuation of the State Board of Tax Service Examiners. However, we do have some concerns and have prepared amendments which speak to them. We suggest changing the use of the word personal to individual, where it refers to the type of law. This occurs several times in the bill and is a housekeeping amendment, as individual, not personal, is a term commonly used in determining someone's tax return. The OAP has strong concerns about one other area in the bill. On page 2, lines 22 through 26, refer to requirements for licensing tax consultants. Our main objections is that the current law does not require that the tax consultants be tested on all areas of knowledge which they must have in order to do their jobs. New language on line 26 adds tax planning to the areas of which they must show knowledge to be licensed. The OAPA feels that if they need to show knowledge of tax planning, they should have knowledge of partnership, corporation C, corporation S tax laws, as these laws which tax consultants should be familiar as they deal with them on a regular basis. Additionally, tax consultants occasionally deal with fiduciary, gift, and inheritance tax issues, and the OAPA believes it is advisable that a licensee should have demonstrated knowledge of the laws governing these areas. To include these changes in the bills, the amendment should read in line 23 after federal, delete personal, and insert individual, partnership, corporation C, corporation S, and fiduciary. In line 24, after practice, insert and gift and inheritance tax law. In line 25, after the third of, delete personal and insert individual, partnership, corporation C, corporation S, and fiduciary. In line 26, after practice, insert gift and inheritance laws. We believe adoption of these amendments would ensure that the tax consultants licensing exam accurately tests the knowledge of consultants must have and use in the operation of the tax consultant business. For your information, there is a complete list of our proposed amendments attached to my testimony. We strongly urge your adoption of these amendments and the passage of House Bill 2093 as amended to the floor. Thank you for your time and consideration of our concerns. I would be happy to answer any questions which you may have.
Have you provided copies of your testimony to the
Yes.
committee administrator? Members? Representative Campbell?
Can you take one more run at me with the difference between personal and individual? I'm kind of at a loss of what you're trying to tell me.
Wording.
I know, but what effectively, what does the difference, what does the change do?
Between personal and individual? Well, when you receive your tax return from the state of Oregon, it has individual tax return on it. It's your Form 40 that you receive. It does not have the word personal on it. This is a house cleaning.
Okay, let me ask another question. If that is not changed in this law, will there be any difference?
No.
It won't make a bit of difference. What their area of responsibility is or anything else. So it's merely to bring it into alignment with
the wording on the tax return.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Otto.
Further clarification on Representative Campbell's question. A person can be a corporation, right? A person can be a corporation. When we use personal income tax, are we implying that that could also relate to corporation?
Mr. Chairman.
I mean, I never thought of all this until Representative Campbell brought it up.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Otto. A person can only own stock in a corporation. He is not the corporation. He may work for the corporation. The board of directors may appoint him to operate the corporation. He may own over.
Turn it around.
He may own 80% of the stock or more, 100% of it, but he is still not the corporation. He is purely a stockholder.
Well, the reason I raised this question, and I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I know on our electrical licensing law, Tom Donica of AOI was in here, and he mentioned a corporation is a person. So I'm just going by his comments, and maybe we want to have legislative counsel check it out. Maybe it probably isn't anything.
Mr. Cass, is it fair to say that the federal government uses, and the state too, in describing the personal income tax, simply uses the word individual rather than personal, and that's what you're getting at?
I think it is.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Campbell.
In your amendments, you're delineating the addition of a number of things on that line, such as individual, partnership, corporation C, corporation S, and fiduciary. Is there anything that they're presently doing that's eliminated by the inclusion of that language?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Campbell, I do not believe there'd be a thing eliminated.
In other words, there's no intention of changing the area of responsibility by the language changes that you've submitted for your amendment.
Right. Okay. The law at the present time only covers the preparation of the individual tax return. The tax consultant is not licensed or tested in the preparation of partnership, corporation, fiduciary, or any of the other returns. He's only tested on the individual return.
Another question, Mr. Chairman. They presently, however, are able to prepare corporation C, corporation S, fiduciary.
Yes, sir.
But what you're saying now is that they're doing the work. Now you'd like to see them tested so that we know they're qualified to do the work they're already doing.
That's right.
So it doesn't change their, excuse the expression, job responsibilities or job descriptions in any way.
No.
That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Cass, what would you your thoughts be if the words tax planning were deleted from line 26? Would that solve all the problems? Or would that make it worse?
Well, I think tax planning should be in there, because tax planning will start when you go into the person doing your tax work and say, what, how much should my estimate be for the next four times in the coming year? And that's probably the lowest and most basic form of tax planning that you would come up with, and from there it moves on up the ladder.
Well, we have an amendment, or a suggestion anyway, for an amendment to simply delete tax planning as one of the requirements.
I would think the tax planning should be maintained in there.
With the other information that you requested. Okay, thank you. Mr. Garlock, do you have anything?
No, I think we pretty well covered it. There, I guess there is one thing, that the licensing of tax consultants, when you see the word tax consultant, you conjure up the all vision of all taxes. You know, there's nothing that says licensed individual tax consultant. And in effect, when they are doing the partnerships and the partners and the corporations and other types of tax returns, I think that the public should be or have some guarantee that they have knowledge in these areas too.
I have a question for either one of you. Must a public accountant also be licensed as a tax preparer or tax consultant?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have one more witness, Merlin Pulliam. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Vice President Kuhn and members of the committee. My name is Merlin Pulliam, and I'm presenting the following testimony as Government Relations Chairman of the National Association of Tax Consultants, the group that Ralph referred to. Also, I'm an owner of an independent accounting and tax office, and these statements reflect my personal view. NATC has about 850 members in the state of Oregon, about 200 in the state of Washington, and a number of members in other states. The National Association of Tax Consultants strongly supports the continued existence of Oregon's Board of Tax Service Examiners. The Board's program of examining and licensing tax practitioners has resulted in a very competent tax service to Oregon citizens and should be continued. Many of the past problems in the area of tax preparation have improved or been eliminated through the Board's regulation. The public has benefited from the availability of competent, low-cost tax preparation services. The tax laws are very confusing and ever-changing. Having qualified practitioners helps to ensure that the taxpayer pays no more tax than he legally should. Practitioners have benefited because they have excellent continuing education readily available to them. They have a higher level of professionalism and ethical conduct and an improved public image. Regulation of practitioners has almost eliminated the problem of unqualified seasonal preparers. Both the Oregon Department of Revenue and the Internal Revenue Service have repeatedly spoken of the improvement in the quality of returns prepared by Oregon practitioners as a result of Oregon's law. Their jobs are made easier by having knowledgeable preparers to work with when involved with audits and collections. Oregon should be proud of the Board of Tax Service Examiners program of examining and licensing tax practitioners. We believe that this committee should definitely recommend the continued existence of the Board of Tax Service Examiners. I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pulliam. That was very brief, and I'm sure it was very effective as a result.
We hope.
Committee members, any questions or comments? Mr. Pulliam, I've got a question. What is a tax consultant? Now, we've had a little debate about whether or not a tax consultant should be engaging in planning, or whether, I guess I've got a question in my own mind, whether they are just supervising tax preparers and are preparers themselves.
The law, Representative Shune, was designed as a two-level law, and the preparer level reflects a certain degree of competency and experience. A consultant reflects an additional degree of competency and experience. And it was the intent of the law that a consultant would have sufficient experience and competency to operate a public business, that a preparer needs experience preparing returns and so forth, and therefore should gain that experience before they could operate a public business. So there's two levels of licensing.
Okay, I guess I wouldn't have any, or don't have any problem conjuring up in my mind that a tax consultant could run a business and supervise other tax preparers for preparing individual tax returns. But what if somebody walked in and said, I'm inheriting a lot of money and I make some other money besides, and I've got this money and I don't know what to do with it. Would you advise me on the best way to invest this and so that I can avoid legally paying taxes or pay the minimum?
Well, I agree with Ivan Hoyer, I suppose, in that dealing with some of these matters, tax planning, and some of the areas that have been suggested as possible amendments to the law, this can expand into a horrendously large area of possibility. Tax planning as such, we have certified financial planners who are, as I understand it, not regulated, not subject to this law. Sellers of tax shelters of all kinds running around, you know, all of which could, a lot of the insurance activity could conceivably come under this general definition and involve some form of tax planning. Now, in our office, and I think this is typical of most tax practitioners, if it's something that we feel qualified to discuss with you, we will. If we don't, we will try to help you find someone who could give you the advice you seek. And part of the code of professional conduct says that we should not attempt anything outside of our competency. And therefore, we're kind of bound not to. I suppose there are those that might get a little over their head, but I would be most interested in whether or not there really is a problem out there in that regard.
I'm not sure that I know either, Mr. Pulliam. Any other questions? We do have one other witness, Pam Farrar from Common Cause, wants to speak briefly on this, and then we'll take a five-minute break.
My name is Pam Farrar. I am the director of Common Cause, but this afternoon I'm testifying for myself as a person who taught consumer education in the Department of Home Economics at Oregon State University. I've heard four arguments so far, I think, for why this board should be continued. I'd like to summarize them for you and respond. The first argument I heard was that tax service examiners are serving the public well. I'd like to offer to you the suggestion that they are professionals who, whether or not they are licensed by the state of Oregon, would continue to serve the public well because they need to survive in business. I think people who don't do that very, very soon are out of the marketplace. And I'd like to suggest to you that perhaps the marketplace in this case is the best place for those kinds of decisions to be made. The second argument I heard was, well, no other state's licensed, but California repealed it and now it's coming back, and Washington State looks like it's coming back as well. I'd like to suggest to you that perhaps the reason for that is that they did, as Oregon seems to have done, and hired a registered lobbyist to do the job for them. The third argument I heard was there's nowhere else, there was nowhere else before 73 when the board came into existence for consumers to go with consumer complaints. That's not true. There's a place called the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's Office right over the way there that does, in my opinion, a terrific job answering consumer complaints. Not only do they do a good job, they have the law enforcement tools that are necessary to make sure that consumers get a fair shake. I'd like to suggest to you that this would be a great opportunity to promote more efficiency in government, do away with this board, and put the functions of the board over in the Attorney General's office. In other words, make it known to the consumers of Oregon that if they have a consumer complaint about tax examiners, they go to the Consumer Protection Division of the AG's office. The fourth argument I heard is that all other professions are licensed from masseurs on down, and why shouldn't we be? And I guess I don't even feel that needs answering, but I would like to bring that up. All in all, I'd like to suggest to you very strongly that the public health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Oregon would not be greatly endangered if this board were allowed to be sunsetted. And I would respectfully request you all to seriously think about that. Thank you.
Any questions, committee members?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Otto.
The Attorney General has already prepared his budget, I assume, for submission to the Assembly. And this obviously would not be in his budget.